And if you're sick and tired of how you're treated, it's only human to feel cheated. Everybody's got a little shit to throw, but I know something they don't know.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby, and from my lovely West Town apartment is Brian Nix. Now you can say something.
Hi.
There you go, Brian.
I hit the microphone with my teeth a little bit by accident.
That's okay, because Brian and I have been spent the last 20 minutes... Well, not Brian and I. Brian has spent the last 20 minutes making this podcast sound better. For the first time in 36, 37 episodes, we are finally recording in stereo, at least the part in my apartment. So thank you, Brian.
No problem.
Also, you might notice I'm a little louder in your left ear. He's a little loud in your right ear. Figure that one out. I know. It's technology, man. We're moving on. I shouldn't be so excited by these things I should have learned years ago, considering I've been in bands and you've seen my bands and you are in bands.
Yes.
Talk, Brian. Jesus, Brian.
What do you want me to say?
No. Okay.
You're hogging the show here, Brandon.
I know. I am hogging the show. I'm trying to spin around and put it on you. So far, we hit a minute right now. I'm going to put it back on you. Okay, Brian. I've known Brian for a really long time. That's just dying on me. That's disgustingly long time. 10 years, probably.
Probably.
And, by the way, are you still driving the same car?
No, it finally died. Well, it didn't die, but... It was getting close, so I sold it this summer and bought a new car.
Good, good. Well, Brian had this old car, this old SUV, and this is funny because right before we recorded, I said, oh, I hate the remember when stories, but whatever, I like this one. So Brian had this wonderful, wonderful car, and I can never remember it not being full of musical instruments or gear. What was it?
It was a 92 Ford Explorer.
92 Ford Explorer. What a wonderful, wonderful big car. And Brian at the time, and still is, in a wonderful band called The Nix. And he's also...
Yeah, we've been doing that for 10 years. Holy...
I know! And you were also recording bands and doing live sound. It was a wonderful thing. Brian comes from the western suburbs, and you're breathing in the mic, man. It's really distracting.
Good.
I know. Brian comes from the western suburbs, and he was... probably the friend of mine that was most involved in the hardcore scene and stuff like that.
Kelsey is home.
My wonderful girlfriend is home, and we're a little over 2 minutes in and we have yet to really talk to you. Okay, so Brian,
you're doing great, buddy.
Shut up, Brian. So we had this Brian was involved in the hardcore scene, and I never understood the hardcore scene. So 10 years later, from when I first met you, what initially appealed you to the hardcore music scene?
Initially, nothing.
Okay, well then why did you follow it? Why did you do sound for these bands?
When people would ask me about hardcore music, I would usually compare it to coffee.
Okay.
It's an acquired taste. And like with coffee, you like the caffeine, you like getting a buzz, so you drink enough, and then eventually you like it so much that you'll even be willing to drink decaf because you're used to coffee.
Yeah.
Hardcore bands, I was... good friends with, like, my sort of mentor band that got me into an underground music and, you know, going to basement shows and coffee shop shows and setting up shows. And actually the first, you know, I just had a PA for practice in my basement, but the band that said, hey, will you come use that to do sound for us? It was a band called Tom Sawyer. And they were friends with a band called Frontside. And I saw Frontside play with Tom Sawyer enough times that I got the taste acquired and started liking hardcore music.
Okay, so when you initially started doing the sound for these guys, what were you listening to? Well, keep in mind, how old were you? 16?
Yes.
So,
15, 16.
Yeah, so 10 years ago, what were you into before it was hardcore?
Offspring, Bad Religion, 10-Foot Pole. That's all I remember.
So this is like pre...
Naked Ray Gun.
This is like pre-internet, keep in mind. Really. Like, you couldn't just hop onto MySpace because there wasn't a MySpace and, find these bands. So, you were, the last wave of organic fans, I'd say.
I would agree with that.
So, do you still like this music? Or is it still an acquired taste and you only like it because you know the guys in the band?
I have a much more...
I'm not telling you to make fun of anybody. I'm just...
I'm not making... At least no one in specific. So, after... I stopped doing live sounds. I think the last time I did was... I was going to say your show I recorded, but I really only recorded
that.
I didn't do the live sound.
We'll get to that later, by the way.
So I haven't done live sound in probably a year and a half. Okay. And the last 2 or 3 years I did it, all I was doing live sound for were hardcore shows, you know, where I'd get paid $50 to $75. And every show, all of the bands would sound the same.
So you were kind of, you were like the guy that would like set up the mics within 2 minutes. You'd just walk away for the next 25, and then like in the
I'd stand. Some shows I could just sit back and not do anything. Other shows I would have to watch the kids beating the hell out of each other and keep them from knocking over speakers or the PA.
So you miss any of this?
Your
salad days?
One of the later shows I did, which actually got heavily critiqued because I had a girl there with me, and the guy who set up the show saw me hanging out with the girl I was with at the time, and was like, that jerk, he was late and he's not doing anything, he's just smushing up with the girl. And actually that was the first show where I had really acquired all of the pieces I wanted for my colossal live sound rig that had main speakers and subwoofers and a properly working crossover, a properly working EQ, and a full 16-channel mixer. So I had every, you know, at hardcore shows, pretty much you set up mics for the vocals,
and that's it. You're done. Because usually, tell these people where the shows were.
The shows were usually in basements,
classrooms.
Classrooms. Yeah, that's most of the sound I did. Anything that wasn't hardcore, I think, was at DePaul.
Okay, okay.
But there was still hardcore at DePaul there, too.
Oh, yeah, there was.
Yeah, usually two mics, the band, the rest of the instruments aren't mic'd, just mics for vocals. So this, I mic'd the entire band, and I knew how to mix music recording at this point, so I knew how to actually mix live sound. You know, the art part of it, where you're using EQ to make all the instruments blend together and be discernible from each other. So I got several compliments from the band this show, that like, wow, oh, I also did monitors. I brought monitors and ran monitors for the band.
So your setup is like, I'm not knocking any clubs here, but this is like mid-level good sounds. This is like Shuba's level sound here. Like, it's not, this is like, I'd say it's better than Ronnie's, and I like Ronnie's, don't get me wrong, I like Ronnie, but this is really expensive shit here. You're towing around like a few grand worth of speakers and a mixer. You have a 16-channel board? Are you making a funk band? What are you doing with 16 channels? Anyways, continue, finish the story.
I mic the whole drum set.
Did you really? Where was this at?
This one was at a Knights of Columbus.
Okay, so what? It's like a 300, 400-person room?
Yeah.
And you mic, and it was a hardcore band?
Yeah. Well, it was five or six hardcore bands. Plus, I had to do the changeovers really fast.
So, I'm not trying to make fun here, but if you don't know the type of music, I'm going to say it sounds like this. Is that fair, yes or no?
There's a rhythm to it, but it does...
Better?
Faster, but yes, okay. That's close.
So you're really going all out. Continue.
Usually every show there'd be one band, I'm like, these guys, there's actually a discernible melody. These guys are really playing music. And the rest of them are just, you know, well, they're all kids. They're young, angry kids, and that's that's what I did when I was a young, angry
totally,
kid.
Totally, totally, but you can't just say they were young, angry kids, because a lot of the guys were older than you and me.
Then those would usually go one of two ways. Either way, those would be the ones that would impress me and be doing something interesting and, you know, have learned something, or those would be the guys that I'm worried I'm going to become that don't really have any original ideas and are just kind of doing the... You know, they're not doing anything I can really say, like, that's bad, it's just boring.
Yes. Well, I want to throw out an amazing band that Brian turned me on to really quick to interject here to prove that I kind of know what I'm talking about, and Brian definitely knows. Brian turned me on to He Who Corrupts, and they are a hardcore band, and they are my favorite live act ever. Number two being the Flaming Lips, and they sound completely different. And those guys are older than us by a few years. Some of them quite a few years, and they're great. And they're one of the few bands where like, oh, you can still be older and do awesome things.
Yeah.
Okay, so sorry, continue, please.
But yeah, the show I went all out on, and I was really pleased with how, you know, you said this is really expensive gear. The whole setup was, but this is all stuff I bought, you know, off Craigslist, secondhand shops. Like, I got it all used, and you know, there's also no blueprints for how to interconnect all these things. I just had learned enough about audio to do it. So, of course, I can't set all of that stuff up in my parents' basement and test it all at once, the rig was too big for a room that small. So this was the first time I'd used it all in conjunction. I was kind of just happy it worked. And it sounded really good. And all the bands, like, that sounded really good. And even the people in the audience that were do enough about sound to tell that it was different from what they're usually hearing. Like, that sounded a lot. What?
Yeah.
We should always have this much of a sound guy for these shows. Sound awesome. But the guy who went through the show is just like, I heard back from the person who, my contact that got me the show. It was actually a different sound guy was supposed to do it, but he couldn't, so he passed it off to me. And he said the guy who promoted the show said he would never let me do another one again because I was late and I was with that girl, and he thought I didn't do any work.
Did you get paid?
I got paid.
Okay.
It was...
I'm not asking for the price, I mean...
It was absolutely nothing for the amount of work I did, which I don't... Because you were asking me if I missed doing sound. I missed doing stuff like that because of the art and the mixing and the satisfaction of actually doing it good. The double-edged sword there is I don't have any roadies, and I don't do sound for a venue that has an in-house thing. I've got to bring all my gear, and yeah. Almost killed myself toting that stuff around.
For the people that don't know, a lot of the venues in town rent a PA from a guy, essentially. Even your more established clubs, the PA that you see there, the system you see there, isn't actually theirs. It's a guy. So, example, the Dark Room, the guy that does the sound of the Dark Room, that's his setup. And he's a great guy, but you know he's going to work his own equipment every night. So he goes in there, he doesn't bring anything. Unlike Brian, who's lugging at least a Ford Bronco, not Bronco, what is
Explorer.
It? Explorer. Ford Explorer's worth of gear around.
Well, also, I had to be amazing at Tetris to fit all of that
yes,
stuff in the
wonderful.
Car.
It was wonderful.
Back end was sagging down, and it has an SUV suspension.
It was so cool to watch him do it. It was great. It's kind of weird because you're one of the few guys that went from playing a lot of shows and then doing sound for a lot of shows and then back to playing a lot of shows.
For a little bit.
Well, no, now. Like you said, you haven't done live sound in a long time, but your band is actually playing. You played like 10 shows this year or something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's,
and
a,
it was like a,
that's
show
a lot
a year.
For us now.
Yeah, but that was like you were playing like a show a year for what?
But before
like, two,
that, we were
years.
Playing like two a month.
That's what I mean.
When you were booking them.
Yeah, when I was booking them. But that wasn't a joke, actually. I just laughed at myself. But why is that? What's the renewed interest, or did you always have the interest and it just schedules didn't work out?
Yeah, mostly schedules didn't work out, and I just got jaded on booking.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of contacting, and please give us a show, please. And also, I'm almost jaded on playing shows just because it's gotten so hard to get people to come.
Yes, it's very difficult. But at the same time, I mean, I don't want to just talk about that because every band ever that's worth their weight in salt has talked about this. So let's talk about the positives here. You obviously still like playing with the Knicks. The Knicks is your band. Let's not... You're the front man, you're the singer, you're the songwriter, you're the guitarist. How would you describe your sound? And don't say this is the hardest question ever, because everyone that ever is in a band has been asked this question. Or just lie to me and say something funny.
I don't know anything funny. We've been using the term loud abrasive rock music for a while.
That's a good description.
We've been getting a little less abrasive lately.
My songs have too. Do you think it's because of age, or you're just tired of playing that, or what?
Yeah, I think it's age. It's maturing. I've been listening to a much wider palette of stuff now.
I don't know, but the last time I was at your apartment, we listened to the newest Shellac record, and those guys got like 15 years on us, and they're as angry as ever, and they're abrasive as ever. So I don't know. Is it just because I'm slightly happier in life, or are you?
Yes.
I think that has actually more to do with it than age. Anyways, that's going nowhere, and I apologize. But you're playing more now. How is it different? Because when you started, could you even drive a car?
The first couple shows we played, my parents dropped me off. Yeah.
I mean, and now that's a little different. You have
well,
a job.
I mean, I started driving a year into the band.
Well, still, I mean, like, how is it? Are you still glad you're doing it? Do you wish you changed names? Do you wish you have a new band? Are you still in this band because you've played in so many other bands as well?
Still in this band because I played in so many others.
Exactly. Because you got to be a drummer in other bands and you got to play different types of music in other bands.
I think I'm still in this band because nothing's gone catastrophically wrong.
Oh, that's good, because usually it's the opposite.
Yeah. One thing I did, my drummer really enjoys pushing my buttons and making me angry.
Which drummer are you speaking of now?
We've had Tony for 8 years.
Yes.
He took two off in the early middle, and we had Derek.
Yes.
So I'm referring to Tony.
But Derek has subbed consistently, correct?
He's the only person that's subbed on drums. I think he's only done it.
I subbed on bass once. Remember that?
You did.
Check it out. Never talk about that again. Okay, continue.
What? Where were we going?
The band. Your drummer drives you, is pushing your buttons.
Yeah, I used to totally freak out and blow up at him, and he just loved it. And like 3 or 4 years ago, I was learning to let it roll off my back, and I don't let him push. Like one time, he's gotten to me, and I threw a guitar at him. But that was actually
Was it during a show?
No, it was It was practice, and that was when I was in a different band, and he was for the first 2 months he played drums in that band until we found someone else.
Got it.
So it was funny. It wasn't even the Knicks, so I threw a guitar at him.
And
it hit James's bass amp instead of Tony, so I felt bad.
Now that you're older and you're playing again, is it as much fun as it originally was, or is it worse?
Maybe I just remember the best things, and it's hard to compare to those memories. But I don't. Most of the shows, I feel like, yeah, that was good, but it's not as good as I remember. Except our 10-year anniversary show, which you way missed out on. That one I expected to turn out that way, but it went
much
better.
You missed my record release show, so there.
Hey, I recorded the one before
that. Exactly. And I was at the one relatively close to that one because it was years ago.
You've missed like our last 10 shows.
I know, and they've all been this year. See, now it's just going to turn into a fight, and I apologize. I'll go to the next one. When's your next show?
That's what you said 3 shows ago.
Then I'll definitely go to the next. I'll send someone there. Fine, I'll go to the next 2. What the fuck, man?
You're still supposed to book me one. That's what the next one's going to be. Yeah. After I recorded your show, you said you'd book me one.
I think I asked you to play the one.
You asked one, and it was really short notice, though, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't short notice.
It was like a week's notice, and JR couldn't make it.
No, it wasn't. You're thinking of a different show.
It was at Cal's.
No. It was not a week's notice. It was at least a month's notice. At least a month's notice. And you said you needed to find out because of the JR schedule, and then you told me about a week later. No, it was not a week's notice. I promise you. Because I made a fucking painting of that show for a poster. It's above your head, by the way. And that was our last show.
No,
that one. See, that was our last show, so I know for sure. So fuck you, then. I'm on your side still. Anyways, now you're just fed up with me. It's wonderful. You record bands.
I did.
You did record bands.
I still record mine.
Do you like this stuff or no?
Oh yeah.
I mean, if you had the money to record anywhere in the world, would you pay for a guy, or would you just rent out a studio yourself? Or would you, like, make your studio, like, your rehearsal space into a studio?
Money's not
an object.
My practice space pretty much is a studio.
But, I mean, like, okay, you have...
If I had all the money in the world, exactly. Yes, I would just upgrade everything in it.
Why? Why not learn from somebody else?
Because someone else is going to make the music sound how they think it's supposed to sound, and now I know the tools well enough to make it sound. That's the problem when you first get into recording, is you don't know all of the fine details enough to get the results you hear in your head. Of course, also, the more you do it, the more, you were saying earlier you've always wanted to be a director. Do you notice the more you pay attention to video and films, the more you notice details?
True, like, but also...
stuff that 3 years ago, if you saw that, you would have completely missed. Well, I have the same thing with audio. Since I've started recording, I now hear details in music that I never noticed before. Also, one thing I wonder about people who record music is how anyone can do it well that doesn't play, because I play guitar, bass, and drums. I feel that makes me significantly better at mixing music because I'm paying attention to each instrument with the same knowledge of it, that instrument.
I understand that completely, actually. But the thing about working with other people sometimes that you can't really learn is the happy accidents in a weird way. You know what I mean? So, like, let's say that I listen to your record and I hear things because I'm an engineer. But if I was in the mixing room with you, or I was in the studio with you guys, I wouldn't necessarily pick up on those happy accidents. Does this make sense?
Happy accidents.
Happy accidents, in terms of, like, things that were unintentional that...
Like serendipity?
Fuck that, no.
You don't like that word.
I don't like serendipity. I don't believe in fate or karma or any of that stuff either.
I didn't know that was tied to fate. I thought it was just what you called it.
Serendipity. The universe is all... No, no.
I apologize for using that word. My understanding of it...
Don't apologize.
Well, no,
Now we have to look it up.
Yeah, I thought it just meant happy accident. I thought it was the fancy word for happy accident.
No, all right, I'm going to hold... Just keep talking for a second.
I'm going to keep talking for a second. Yeah. Brandon's trying to find out.
The dictionary?
Mike's here.
Cool.
just hand it to me through there. It's on the shelf. Yeah, on the bookshelf. It should be next to the robot. It is. It's next to the robot.
It's really funny because Brandon told me to keep talking while he did that, but he's yelling so loud it would have drowned out anything.
Oh, that's not good. See, let's look at it. See.
All right, so Kelsey's bike got
Brandon
stolen.
Brandon is the only person I know that still uses a paper dictionary.
Dude, you can see how old this is. If you go to the S page, it has the alphabet, and then I wrote Cubs, Power, and then the S equals S. So I was probably 5 when I got this dictionary and still use it.
Good for you.
I know. Words usually don't change that much. All right, serendipity. Serendipity. Serendipity.
I just want to pretext this. I learned the definition of this word in a high school physics class. So
what do you think it is?
I thought it was just, you know, something happens that's not what you intended, but it still yields a desirable result, even better than what you had expected.
Yes, an apparent aptitude for making fortunate discoveries accidentally. I would like to apologize to Brian for associating serendipity with words like fate. And what was the other one? Karma. I apologize. Anyways, so the happy accidents is what we're talking about. The happy accidents.
Like you inviting me over here to do this podcast and me tweaking out your setup.
No,
did you plan that?
No, I didn't plan that at all. But it'd be more like, it's like, okay, you mixed my band's most recent album.
Yeah.
And
That was fun.
That was fun. I had a good time with you. That sounded weird, like we dated. You did something. I told you to do something, and you like clicked on the wrong thing, and I was like, no, use that instead.
Okay.
That's a happy accident. Therefore, like, if you were doing that alone or something, or if I just sent you the email or vice versa, you maybe would have never
done
that.
If I was doing it alone, you know, you had a sound in mind of what you wanted.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't have that sound in mind. It was a happy accident.
Well, I can make those by myself, too.
Okay, that's all
I'm
saying.
If I click the wrong thing and I like it, I'm going to keep it. I don't have a
because you just said like it's the sound in your head. So the question really should have been
sometimes I accidentally stumble onto something that's better than the sound in my head.
So you're not tied to like the single sound.
No.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. How long have you been playing the songs you're currently playing live?
We still play some from that are probably from 2002, and we have our newest one we wrote in 2008.
Do you find that it's harder or easier to write songs the older you get? Or have you ever been, like, a prolific songwriter?
I would have never say I've been a prolific songwriter. I'm amazed some of the old ones I have were catchy enough that we still play them. As I've gotten older, I have a higher standard and want to write things that challenge me more to play. Like, the last few songs I wrote, I came up with a part that I'm like, oh, this is really good, but I can't play it correctly. Like, it's very sloppy, like just barely hitting the notes I'm trying to, so I have to practice it for a week before I get to sound, you know, like a real musician.
I'd like to point out for the person in the room that isn't me, Brian was doing what I think every guitar player does when you ask him about a song, and he was playing it in, like, his left hand. He's a righty, so his left hand was playing the notes on the guitar neck. I've seen him do that before. It's wonderful. Sorry, it's like you know you write songs when you're a songwriter when you're like trying to figure out what to play in the air.
I don't know. Like the last few songs I wrote, where I work, my office moved. Well, now I'm not in a single office anymore. They put all of the staff in one big room. When I had my own office, I had a guitar in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and when I was waiting for a computer to do something, or if I just didn't have any work to do, I would play guitar, and that's when I wrote, like, my last 2 or 3 songs.
That actually sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it was. And now that I don't have an office with a guitar in it anymore, I pretty much only play guitar when I'm at my rehearsal space, and I never feel inspired there.
I'm sorry.
I spend all my time just trying to tweak the settings on my amp to make my guitar sound as good as it can, and then I'll play stuff I know and like.
Do you have an iPhone?
No. I have a Windows mobile phone.
Do you have an iTouch or whatever? One of those things you can get an iPhone application?
No.
I don't know if this application exists, and since you know computers, we should go into this together, and by going it together, I mean, I give you the idea, you do all the work, and then we split the profits. Deal? Good.
Okay.
I think the iPhone is roughly, like, the middle of it is roughly you can play, like, the size of a guitar neck. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They need to figure out a way someone used to design it where you can play guitar. So if you get, like, inspired on, I don't know, where you're walking home from the L, you can just, like, essentially record a demo of the guitar track on your iPhone directly.
That's a good idea.
I know, and that way you can still play guitar in your office instead of having the actual whole guitar. That's all. I'm sorry. Continue.
I'm thinking about how that would work.
I don't know how we would design it at all. This is just the idea. That's why I'm the idea man. Anyways, Brian, you're in technology. You've always been into technology, and you're one of the smartest people I know. But you said before we recorded this that you're also into, like, researching things, right? And your example was you were reading a lot about photography and learning the technology about it.
I was actually talking about video cameras.
Video cameras, I'm sorry.
That was just a generic example because I couldn't think of a better one at the time.
Don't worry about it. So you're into technology, but you said that you're researching but not necessarily doing anything.
Yeah.
How does this even come about?
I feel like at this point I've become so... Well, technology is moving so fast, and I've just gotten so interested with things that are evolving rapidly. So I almost find it more interesting just knowing what is going to come out next and what new features it has, and thinking about, oh, if I had this, I could do this, this, and this, and then I... You know, rarely do those things I think of. I, you know, instead I'm too busy reading about what's coming out next because there's already something new.
Give me an example of one of those things that you think of.
I spend a lot of time researching phones and thinking about what my next phone is going to be. Really like it if I could. Ideal phone would have an HTML editor. Well, I mean, I could get an HTML editor for this phone and an FTP client, but it would be relatively difficult to work on. So, you know, the ones that have the sliding keyboard, kind of like the...
Like a BlackBerry.
No, BlackBerry's got the built-in keyboard. BlackBerry's
a flip keyboard?
Yeah, the one on the side. So the screen is much bigger.
Like the new Google phone or something like that?
Yeah, that. Where you've got a big sideways screen and a larger keypad. That I could maybe actually make quick changes to a website. Although the new... if you have the right version of Windows Mobile, you can actually remote desktop into your regular computer.
Okay.
So because the phone has limited processing power, it can only run lightweight apps. That's enough to do quick tweaks on a website.
But continue.
I need to make tweaks to a Flash site, and you're not going to run Flash on your phone. But your phone could just serve as a front end that's piping mouse clicks and keystrokes to a real computer. So you would have Flash installed on your computer at home. You would remote into that, open up Flash, make your tweaks, re-export it.
But why are you thinking about this?
Well, technically, I still do freelance web work, and I was working for... I just did a couple of things for him recently, and I hadn't done anything in several months. So I called up, like, oh, bro, Brian, can you do this? I'm like, sure.
But are you doing this because you like it, or are you just doing it because, like, you got to do it because you have a timeline?
It definitely makes me more desirable as a web person that can do stuff.
Do you want to do this? Do you want to be a web person?
I think I do. I think that's what I want to be when I grow up now.
Even though you have a full-time job and
you're
definitely a grown-up, you want to be a web guy when you grow up.
Yes.
When did you come to this conclusion?
I thought the dream I have now would be that's been my goal for like the last 3 years was to get where I am now. Mm-hmm. And now I'm actually here. I hate it.
Okay. Well, it's good that it's like, well, let's be honest. You don't have a child. Mm-hmm. And you don't have any responsibilities in terms of, like, I don't know, a partner. So that's good. This is the time to change.
Yeah. Oh, also my job right now, I've been working at the same place for many, many years, climbing the ladder to where I thought I wanted to be, and I feel like I'm just so sick of even though we just moved to a new physical location, I'm so sick of the scenery and burnt out on the culture, and I really just want to get out of there. At the same point where now I keep going back and forth every couple of days, because something will happen that'll remind me of why I like the place and make me want to stay there, and there are some things I aspire to do there still, but there's so much stuff that I think is completely broken and backwards, and that my current position is not in the power to fix that. There's nothing I can do about it. And that feeling of, I know this needs to change, but I can't change it, is very soul-crushing.
Are you worried about not being able to change it? Because you obviously without can't talking change about it, what you I can do, quit.
Well, I can quit. But
We're not going to talk about what you do or where you work, but we can't.
So we'll say customers. I a long time ago thought we were giving the customers a good experience, and that made me feel warm and happy about myself. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like we're just stealing their money.
Okay, but do you think that you feel this way because you're in because things have changed, or because you were inevitably going to come to this conclusion of regardless of what happened, simply because of time spent?
I would have to think about that. I don't have a quick answer for that.
Okay.
You might. It could be a little bit of both.
Okay.
But what I know is, you know, I thought this would be a job where I didn't feel like I was just stealing people's money. Mm-hmm. And now
that
I've...
To make it clear, you're not robbing people, literally.
Just, no.
You're not literally doing anything illegal or bad.
No, I'm technically helping people. Just the amount of help that is theoretically possible to give them and the amount they're actually getting, the amount of money they're paying for help, I feel like it's robbery.
Got it. That's not good.
And this I feel so passionate about because actually way before I got into this profession, I was on the other end of it. I was the customer, and I felt like I got a very good deal, and it was worth every penny of what I spent. But now that I'm on the other end of it, I'm happy with myself and what I'm doing. I'm, you know, giving people their money's worth, but all of the I don't feel everyone else there, and it's mostly just the bureaucracy for me.
Bureaucracy.
You didn't even say it very well either.
Bureaucracy. That's looking it up. Pronouncing B-E-U-R. Bureaucracy. Isn't that right?
He likes using that dictionary.
Bureaucracy. That's the correct one.
Yeah, no, you got good that time. You pronounced the R the first time you said it. I'm like, that wasn't that better than me stuttering over it. I'm just... you offered me water earlier and I didn't take it, and now my mouth's all dry and
well,
I can't talk right.
Well, let's close it up then. We're going to close it up from a question from the Kids Book of Questions by Gregory Stock, PhD. So, Brian, give me a number between 1 and 260.
78.
Did you know this going in that you were going to have one of these?
No.
Good.
How could I have possibly known that?
By listening to the show, asshole.
Oh.
It closes every fucking podcast that's done in this apartment. Jesus Christ.
The only one I listened to was done in a bar.
You need to listen to more. That's, I think, 1%. No, that's like 4%. Anyways, do you have many mementos and souvenirs? If so, how much money would someone have to give you to get you to throw them all away?
Well, that's a tough one. I have some mementos and souvenirs, and you'd
what
have
are they
to
mostly
give me
of?
Some money to throw them away.
That is an awful answer, Brian.
That's what I was going for.
What's your favorite memento that you have? Concert shirt, ticket stub.
Yeah, that stuff's all in storage.
Well, so do you have any one thing around your apartment that's like?
I've got stuff.
Not personal stuff. Not like this is from my girlfriend or this is from my mom. No, like I bought this at this place for me.
Oh, so it's the stuff I'm talking about would be tied to like dead relatives and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, not that stuff. That to me, that's not like that's not a souvenir.
Okay.
Though it could be classified as a memento, whatever. I'm talking about, like, for example, I'm looking at a Carlos Zambrano figurine. That's a memento.
Ooh, I've got, at my parents' place, I have my collection of Simpsons trading cards.
There you go. What year? Do you remember?
96, 94.
All right.
Probably 96. I don't know. I like those a lot, but I also forgot I had them for 3 years straight. So, yeah, I wouldn't sell them unless it was for a lot of money. So I guess I wouldn't throw them out unless it was for a lot
of money.
There
you go. So lots of money is the answer.
Yeah.
Okay, you don't know the next Nick show, do you?
Then there is none at this point.
All right. Therefore, I'm going to plug the next You, Me, Them, Everybody event. It's going to be on Monday, May 4th at the Hungry Brain. Daniel Knox is... What? What? What?
You should add with Salkins. I'm just being a dick.
Say it.
Oh,
don't do that. That's just mean. That's just mean. I'm not going to... Just stop that right now.
Drink every time I say
We're not playing that game, Brian. See, this is a really in-joke that literally three people will understand, but I will not edit away. And if you come to the event, I will tell you in person what this is all about. Anyways, it's Monday, May 4th at the Hungry Brain. Daniel Knox is going to be playing with Kang Ki Rai. And Daniel Knox, we play him almost every show. Wonderful performer. We're going to close out with this. Brian, it is now your responsibility to send me info about the next Nick show. So once it's booked, I will plug it on this show and play a Nick song. Deal?
And still not come to it. But
I will come to it. What the fuck, man? I'm not doing anything for you then, ever. No, he's a good man. He's recorded my album. He's a great man. I will come to it with ample warning, and if I'm not working at the brain. Deal?
Deal.
Shake on it. As we shook on it, I will be there in person. So Monday, May 4th, Hungry Brain, Daniel Knox. Thanks to Brian. Go to check out the Knicks. How? MySpace, Facebook, what do you use?
NickChicago.com.
NickChicago, NIXChicago.com?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful evening.
I make enemies everywhere I go, everywhere I go, everywhere I go. I make enemies everywhere I go, all day long. And if you're sick and tired of how you're treated, it's only human to feel cheated. Everybody's got a little shit to throw, but I know something they don't know. I make enemies everywhere I go, all day long. I leave victims in my path, in my path, in my path. I leave victims in my path, all day long. Because they ruin all the air where I live and breathe. I got something up my sleeve. Everybody's gonna have to feel my wrath. Tonight there's gonna be another bloodbath. I leave victims in my path all day long. Make faces at the women and the kids, the women and the kids, the women and the kids. I make dirty faces at the women and the kids all day long. Because they walk around with the stink and the noise. Oh, how I hate the girls and the boys who squeak and cackle at the height of their fun. It doesn't do a bit of good for anyone. I make faces at the women and the kids.